You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Well, the election season is just a few months away, considering the primaries are almost around the corner. States, therefore, are investing big bucks in electronic voting machines because that's part of a federal requirement to upgrade voting technology to try to avoid disputed elections, recounts, just say the name Florida. But just so how secure are these new electronic voting machines? Making them electronic, does that make them all that much better? Can they be tampered with, hacked into? So someone with knowledge of computing might be able to rig the results. That's what the state of California wanted to know. So the state asked teams of researchers at the University of California to conduct a top-to-bottom review of different electronic voting machines that are certified to use in the state. And guess what? The results are not too encouraging. And now California must decide by today whether to decertify any or all of the electronic voting systems used in the state. Here to talk about it with me is Matt Bishop. He's a professor in the Department of Computer Sciences at UC Davis, co-director of the Computer Security Laboratory there, and leader of a red team, a group of pseudo-hackers tasked with trying to break into voting machines of the state of California. Welcome to the program, Dr. Bishop.
Thank you.
How easy was it?
The red teams were able to find attacks that very, very quickly. Some took longer to find than others. When they were carried out, most of the attacks were very quick.
Tell us what was the mission. Was that the mission of your team as assigned by the state?
Not quite. First off, I was more or less supervising the there were two red teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the principal investigator, which meant I did coordination and worked with the teams and so forth. Anyway, the we were supplying information for Secretary Bowen's top-to-bottom review. Basically, we were looking at the technology.
Right.
And the question we were asked was, is it possible to cause these machines to is it possible to compromise the integrity of the machines or the integrity of the results that they store, or the integrity of the recording of the votes to change the accuracy of the machines and so forth? And so the red teams basically played the role of attackers and were able to compromise those aspects of the machines. We gave Secretary Bowen detailed information of how it was done, and and then it's up to her to take that information and the information from three other groups,
mm-hmm.
People who are looking at the source codes or the codes that control the machines, people who were reviewing the documents, and people who are looking at how accessible the machines are for disabled people or people with impairments.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has to decide whether or not the machines should, you know, remain in use or be decertified or some other action as appropriate.
Hmm.
In other words, we didn't look at the policies and procedures surrounding any of these machines.
Right. That's up to the politicians to do that.
Well, right. And, well, yeah. The other reason is they vary among the 58 California counties.
I see.
So in the limited time that we had to look at those would simply not have been feasible for us to do. Also, we're technology folks. At least
right.
All of the red teams were technology folks. So I'm not real sure how we would have gone about looking at the policies and procedures.
1-800-989-8255 is our number, 1-800-989-TALK. Talking with Professor Bishop, Matt Bishop, about hacking into the California voting machines. Where were the vulnerabilities, Dr. Bishop?
They ranged from being in the, you know, in the physical construction of the boxes themselves. We were able to, the red teams were able to bypass locks and seals and things like that, to the software in the computer in the voting station. The teams were able to overwrite the software that was there and put in malicious code. That, for example, could, if you voted for candidate A, it could record it as candidate B, both in the in memory and in the paper trail. And if you didn't look carefully, you would miss it. It could also record it as it could display it as A on the screen and B on the paper trail. And if you didn't notice the discrepancy, your vote would be recorded as B, and an audit would not have found it. There were also other games that could be played with the paper trails. We or the red teams looked at the election management software, which is used at the county seats to count votes, prepare ballots, and things like that, and typically found that those could also be compromised.
Could someone walk right into the booth with just stuff they could carry in and do these things, or did you have to take the machine apart and play with it?
The attacks could be carried out in many cases with, hang on a moment, let me get the wording for this exactly right. The attacks could be carried out with ordinary objects.
What's that?
That you could get, you know, from an office or a home.
So that is that a paper clip or is that a magnet or what kind of objects are we talking about?
We're talking about things that could be carried easily, and I can't be more specific than that.
I don't blame you.
there were actually two versions of the reports. You have the public versions, which say what can be done, but don't give details because we don't want people to be, you know, to be able to do these things, or at least not from these reports. Then there are private ones, which the Secretary of State has, which basically go into a great deal of detail describing each successful attack, the unsuccessful ones, and why we believe they failed, and then the ones that we would have liked to have tried, ones that the red teams would have liked to have tried but simply didn't have time.
Now, the companies that make the machines have been critical, saying that you had access to information manuals about how the machine works and whatever that normal voters might not have.
Well, you have to be very careful when you make a claim like that. The first thing is there's this idea of what's called security through obscurity, where essentially it's a little bit like taking all of its money and putting it in a room and shutting the door and then saying, no one will ever find this room, so we're not going to waste our money on a lock. If someone does find that room, it's all over. The second problem with that is that information in this day and age tends to get circulated very freely. The Internet, for example, things get posted to the Internet. There have been voting machines sold on eBay. How do they know that others won't have access to this information? I'd also like to point out that occasionally companies or customers will, not deliberately but entirely by accident, leak information. There were two really good examples of this. The first one was when the DVD playing program was cracked by someone in Norway and it was posted to several websites. And one of the DVD Copyright Control Association, or whatever it's called, filed suit in New York to get the thing taken off websites. In the process of their filings, one of their papers described exactly how the software would work in enough detail to let anyone reconstruct it. One day later, they asked the court to seal it because they had forgotten to seal it. In that time, it had been posted to a rather large number of websites, including one that had 21,000 downloads.
Wow.
In another case, just recently, Fox News and the AP, it was one of the two, looked at contractors' websites and found contractors for the Department of Defense and found information that they said would endanger the lives of U.S. troops. When they contacted the contractors before they wrote the story, the contractors were horrified and immediately pulled the information off. But in a situation where lives depend on it, apparently even their information can leak. So, you know, that's another issue. The third thing is that keeping the information secret assumes that people can't figure things out. And attackers are incredibly ingenious. There's a technique known as social engineering where you can often get people to reveal information that they didn't realize that they were revealing. For example, one group was doing a penetration study of a large corporation, and what they did as part of it, they would call up new hires and say, we're the security folks, we need to talk to you about security. They'd go through a little description, and then they say, now what's your account name? What's your password? That's a good password, or no, that's not a good password. Change it to this. This is a good password, and so forth. And the new hires were doing it.
So it's like the kind of phishing email we get on our computer.
Exactly. Phishing is just another type of this social engineering.
Right. So if the threat here is that someone could actually get one of these machines, as you're saying, and just publish on eBay or sell a little device you could take into the voting booth with you.
Yes, and you see, there's another thing that people I'm hearing a lot of, which is, well, you guys had 5 weeks. Well, first of all, it didn't take us 5 weeks to come up. It didn't take the red teams 5 weeks to come up with all of the attacks. Some of them they came up within minutes. Others took more preparation. But once the attacks were prepared, all you needed was access at certain key points in the voting process to either memory, to cards, or to systems, and you could carry out these attacks. Now, the key issue is getting access, and that's where policies and procedures come in, because in essence, these machines, you layer defenses. So, for example, if one policy is don't let people into the room where there's an election management system, beautiful. However, what happens if that policy fails? What happens if someone manages to slip in? Okay, and to say that that will never happen to me indicates a very high belief in human infallibility, one probably higher than warranted. So in that case, the technical defenses of the machine should come into play. Well, what was found, by the Red Team study, and by the way, was amplified by the, in different words, by the source code review studies, were in essence that the security mechanisms for the specific machines, in other words, the technological ones, were inadequate to ensure that the election results were both accurate and hadn't been changed, and also that the systems themselves were secure and accurate.
Hmm. So what is the solution here? I mean, from the litany of what you're saying, I wouldn't want to be the, you know, Secretary of State of California.
The one thing I think everyone on the red teams agreed with was they were very, very glad they were not Deborah Bowen.
Yeah.
As far as solutions go, from the technological end, there are techniques for building systems that, while they're not perfect, or they don't produce perfect systems, do produce systems in which people can have a higher degree of confidence or a fairly high degree of confidence that, yes, they do what they're supposed to. And these are called high assurance techniques, and the vendors, quite frankly, at least based on what the red teams found, very clearly did not use them. It seemed as though they built the system or designed the systems and then added security, and that never works as well as building it in from the beginning.
All right, let me just
let me
break in and let everybody know this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Talking with Matt Bishop, professor in the Department of Computer Sciences at the University of UC Davis. See, what you're saying, if you had started out from the beginning saying we're going to build a secure computer voting machine instead of tacking it on later, you'd get a better result.
What I'm saying is if they said, okay, we want to make this system secure and accurate and add in, you know, make sure people can't tamper with it, then what you do is you design in the mechanisms into the software to do that. As you're building the hardware, you design mechanisms into the hardware to do that. And quite frankly, it would have been very interesting had the company said, okay, we've got this system now. We think it's good. Let's get a bunch of people who are unconnected with us and see what they can do to it.
Call the hackers in. Let them hack into it.
Well, I don't like putting it that way because it sounds like you're going to bring in a bunch of bad people, which you don't. You bring in people who know how to do this stuff, mm-hmm. and who aren't, you know, who will work with you. By the way, there is precedent. I remember when I was a kid growing up in San Francisco, BART opened. And one of the things they were concerned about was how hard was it to get through the BART ticket turnstiles, mm-hmm. because they were high-tech at the time. So what they did, first of all, was they had some companies come in and look at it, and then they got a bunch of students from Caltech and said, see what you can do.
Right.
And the students found, I think, about 7 or 8 ways to get through them.
But you're saying that they didn't go through this rigorous testing procedure.
I don't know whether or not they did. The results certainly indicate that they did not.
Mm-hmm.
And if they did, then there's something seriously flawed with the process that they used.
Now, there's a story out today on the AP about Florida also wondering whether its machines are working, you know, and saying that they're not confident. Some people are not confident in the Florida machines either. And there are other states and other tests going on.
good, because it's very important that people have facts in order to evaluate whether or not machines should be used, whether or not the election system is working, and so forth. And we view, at least I view what we did, as providing some of those facts, some of the technological facts, to Secretary Bowen and to the public. Mm-hmm. And if the decision is made to use these machines, that's wonderful. People know what the risks are. If the decision is made not to use them, again, that's wonderful. The decision will be made not in whichever decision is made, it's not going to be made in ignorance of what these machines can and cannot do.
Well, these machines, as they are now, would you have confidence in them for the next elections if we stay with them?
Well, okay. The problem with answering that question, as you've asked it, is the election is a process, and so the machines have flaws. The question is, can we build in what are called compensating controls? Can we? Are the policies and procedures that election officials follow sufficient to offset the flaws in the machines? And that's something that that I believe is what Secretary Bowen has to answer. The short answer is I don't know. There are some things on the machines that clearly following good policies and procedures would take care of. There are some things which, quite frankly, I question whether or not you would be able to stop them. But I'm not an election official, and I'm not a Secretary of State, and I don't know all the details of what they do. The one thing I would also caution is it's got to be more than just following just writing procedures on paper. They also have to be implemented correctly. And, for example, in 2004, Maryland had issues with its Diebold machines. And so in 2003, they had commissioned a study in the wake of a report by some people out of Johns Hopkins, which basically said the source code that was posted on the Internet is very badly done. And Diebold essentially said, well, it's not the right source code. We've improved things quite a bit, and so on and so forth. So Maryland retained a company called SAIC to do an analysis of these systems. And SAIC came back, and one of the things they said was, if you tried to vote multiple times, which would require you putting a card into the machine for one vote, then removing it, the machine
rejects
it. Dr.
Bishop, I'm going to have to interrupt.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. You had some great explanations. I appreciate you taking time to be with us. We'll get back to you.
Okay.
We'll follow this as the election season comes up.
Okay.
Matt Bishop, professor in the Department of Computer Science at the UC Davis. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk about that bridge collapse. Stay with us. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.